And the list goes on down the line. And the list goes on.
I just love how people can hear you snorting on your hot mic. You're just going like that randomly. I know, Camille, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Because it's, you know, a hot mic every time it happens.
If I cared, then I'd probably be like, "Ooh, that's unfortunate." But I don't. So it is what it is. So, Sean, what makes AEW different from every other wrestling company that started up over the last, 20 years?
Wins and losses are supposed to matter, and that's I don't know. And they're putting brand new people on TV. They're putting people on TV in golf shorts, lots of stuff.
Well, the real answer is money, and the reason that AEW is still around and continuing to thrive is that they had financial backing. That's the one thing that makes them different from every other wrestling company that has tried to launch since WCW went out of business. In 2001, AEW was featured in a story by Forbes, and there was some interesting stuff in there. Of course, we knew that Tony's dad, Shad Khan, was the financial benefactor of AEW. I think we all knew that. Shad has reportedly invested $100 million into AEW so far, and Tony Khan acknowledged that last year they made $43.75 million off of TNT. But ended up in the red because they invested eight figures into their video game division. Mm-hmm. No other company since WWE in the last 20 years has that capability, and that is why AEW succeeds and is still around. So I thought it was very, very interesting that they went into this. What other company could afford to blow like nine figures in two years? You know what I mean? So I thought it was a very interesting article, and I think also the fact that Tony Khan, so not only does he have the money, but he's a smart, knowledgeable wrestling fan. Not he didn't just do this because he saw a business opportunity. He did it because he wanted to. Kind of like me with Fightful. You know what I mean? I didn't do Fightful to make money. I did it because I just wanted to.
I'm ready for that eight-figure investment into me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That way it'll keep you in the red.
Yeah, like permanently. Yeah, that would be good. So
think of all the sinkholes I'd get away from. I'm about to fill that thing in this weekend, legitimately.
Thinking about how many sinkholes I'd create.
Yeah.
If I did that.
I want you, Jimmy, to roll up the AstroTurf from your backyard and give it to me.
Yeah, I might have to do that.
Yeah.
Because that was when I financed the eight-figure investment. I'd be pulling up the playset and the trampoline in my backyard, sending them to Sean Ross. Yeah. So let's talk about something else Mark Henry said in the Renee Paquette interview. I'm going to read a quote and I want your thoughts. Mark Henry said, quote, "I love the Bucks doing super kicks. Why are there three matches on the card where someone does a super kick before them? If that was me, I would be upset about it." What do you think about that?
Super kicks, not so much. He used it
as an example of the same thing being used over and over.
Well, yes, I agree with that. Over in WWE, I mean, I get the Eddie Dominic connection. I know that Sasha's paying homage to Eddie as well. Nobody does a better frog splash than Montez Ford. I just let him have it. Kevin Owens too. Kevin Owens, I wouldn't have him doing that. In AEW, I see a lot with pile driver. I see over and over and over again, and then it's FTR's finish. So yeah, I agree. So the super kick, it's like it's such a common move now. And to me, it's more about who delivers the move than it is the move itself.
Well, this week on Raw, as an example, so Drew McIntyre now, the Michinoku driver has become a part of his arsenal.
Yeah.
He does it real well. We saw him do it to Braun Strowman a few weeks ago on Raw. He does it really, really well. He used it again on Raw this week, but he used it after Cedric Alexander used it.
Yes.
And he used it after Piper Niven used it. And so, you know, that's an example of an issue. Another thing that WWE now they're doing way too often is that a match will have started and then somebody else's music hits and they come out to cause a distraction mid-match. WWE did that three times.
Sit on commentary sit by the booth every time.
Yep, they did that three times. So that's another thing. And then this reminded me of something else. You've seen The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke, right?
Yeah, of course.
You know the scene where they're in the locker room and the guys are talking about working the neck, and then the guy looks and goes, "Oh, you're working the neck? Oh, okay. Well, then."
Yes.
That used to be the mentality.
That's the agent's job. That's right. The producer's job. The agents and producers got to coordinate with each other and say, "This is what's going on."
Like, it's amazing to me because you would think that Cedric Alexander, as an example, you know, Drew McIntyre is using the Michinoku driver.
Yes.
And he's a top guy in the company. So what the hell are you doing, you know, putting that move in? And then whoever produced the Piper Niven match, that was the finish.
Yep.
Like, the hell are you doing? You know what I mean? So it's definitely, I think it's something that's become a lost art, is protecting moves, you know, angles, making them unique and all that. They just don't do it that often anymore, I find, you know?
When you make tried and true things not matter, it's a snowball effect. The basics still work. The basics of storytelling and innovation, and wrestling is full of creators and creative people. Very few people get into pro wrestling on their own as like, oh my God, I'm going to make a bunch of money. Maybe somebody will touch them on the shoulder and go, you could make a lot of money. But most people get into pro wrestling because they're creative people and they want to create stories, create moves, create matches, and create moments. And you have to give them the ability to do that. But also, if they're creating something that is exactly the same as somebody else, you have to tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, let's switch it up a little bit, or maybe this will work. That's the job of an agent or a coach.
Right. Well, let's move on. This week, there's going to be somebody making their debut on AEW Dynamite. Brock Anderson, the 23-year-old son of Arn Anderson. I had seen pictures of him before he was on television, and the pictures I saw, he didn't have a beard. And when Brock Anderson shows up on Dynamite with a beard, goddamn, does he look like his dad from 30 years ago?
It was eerie.
He's not as muscled up, it doesn't look like, although maybe it's just what he's wearing, but he looks like Arn Anderson, peak four horseman from like the NWA on the Superstation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What he looks like. And so I'm curious to see what he can do. Like, have you, because I, you know, looked back, did a little bit of research on him. He's been training for at least 6 months. It was January that word got out that he was training. So he's been training for at least 6 months. I'm sure he's going to use a spine buster. I mean, you know, he is.
Yeah. Gotta.
But, yeah. But
it better be a good one. Better be a good one though.
It better be a good one. Have you heard anything about how he's doing?
No, I haven't heard much of anything. Rob Oaken says, don't think they're doing any favors for Brock Anderson putting him with Cody. I agree. I don't know that having Cody with all these people that do not have a name for themselves right now is a good idea. I don't know if this is the right thing to do. And they need to have him on taped shows. He got to be on taped shows.
Right.
Because you don't know what he's doing.
Do you think that they think that putting him with Cody gives him a rub?
Yes, for sure.
And same with the other guys prior to, even though Cody beat Andrew at the pay-per-view when he probably shouldn't have.
Anthony.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. I think they think that. But to me, I just don't care about the story. Right. I don't care about the story or the people involved in it. And it's making me care about Cody less, to the point to where Cody is getting, I don't want to say go away heat, but it's just like, because I don't want him to go away. Yeah. I want the story to go away. I want to see him do something else. If they would have went a different route with it, I might have cared a little bit more. But I don't think it was very self-aware to do what they did. Like, I think Cody should have attacked a Go-Go's eye and gone heel. Mm-hmm. And a Go-Go made a babyface comeback. That's what I think should happen. And then Cody cuts him off and beats him, and he's the heel.
He had been kind of suggesting that he was going heel in the past. Like, he showed some tendencies, but he hasn't gone full bore with it. Do you, because I agree with you, I think Cody is starting to get go away heat, which is surprising considering where he was 2 years ago. Do you think that Cody maybe, I gotta watch how I phrase it. Do you think that maybe he's buying too much into his own shit? So what I mean,
don't know.
Do you get what I mean? Where he,
yes, I do.
So he looks at himself as kind of like the you know, kind of like the top guy. He's the one now that is kind of like the face, aside from Tony Khan. He's the face when it comes to answering questions about talent and about contracts and about all that stuff. He's the one now that's getting the third party opportunities. He's the one that did the judging on that one show. Now he's getting a reality show with Brandy. Now he's getting a podcast about stuff that's not wrestling related. Do you think that maybe now the fan base is saying, okay, he's a little bit too much into his own shit, and when they put him in the ring on the pay-per-view with Anthony, he went over and he shouldn't have. Do you think that all of that is starting to kind of layer on him a little bit?
Yes. That's the short answer. Yes, I think it is.
Right.
But I think you should be more self-aware.
Yes.
Because being self-aware, if you know that you've got that kind of heat, lean into it and garner that reaction.
I don't think he does know, but the question is, wouldn't Tony Khan know?
And that should be the guy that says this isn't working. It's on him. He's got to say it's not working. I mean, he said that about Nightmare Collective and got to do it. It just isn't working. I'm all for developing new people and making new stars, but it seems like, okay, you've got a faction full of them.
Yeah.
And then you're using some for Cody. It's a little too much. It's almost overwhelming. It feels like that exists on an island of its own from the rest of the show.
It almost reminds me of Hogan. When Hogan would recognize, okay, Savage is getting hot, so I'm going with him. Yeah. And hey, this guy Warrior, boy, he's getting a buzz. I'm going with him. It almost feels like that when Hogan would recognize, you know, where there's opportunity, and he would insert himself into it. And it comes off kind of like a similar thing. And you and I don't want to crap on Cody, because obviously he's done very well for himself since he left WWE, and he's done really, really well. But you and I have talked a little bit about some of the supposed executive decisions that he's made that are questionable, or things that he said. Like, he talked about how he practiced a promo with a focus group.
Yes, which he clarified was his friends. He says his friends and coworkers were the focus group, not a sanctioned like Turner focus group.
But why would you even use that term?
I don't know.
So it comes off like he's trying to maybe act like he knows more than he does sometimes. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But I when you said go away heat, that's kind of what I felt. So it's time for the heel turn with Cody Rhodes.
I think so as well.
Right. Okay. Alexa Bliss. So I'm watching the match with Nia Jax, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this isn't bad because she's not using any hocus pocus shit. You know? So I'm thinking this isn't, I mean, yeah, Nia, you know, it's the first time I've seen Nia basically be enhancement talent. That was different.
Buddy, wait until that actual hocus pocus sequel comes out and Vince McMahon goes, I remember that.
Yeah. 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 But I watched that match thinking, okay, I'm optimistic. Because Alexa's not using any bullshit. She's just wrestling. So I'm like, even though she was incredibly dominant, she's using wrestling. There was no wardrobe change. There wasn't suddenly a swing in the ring. And I thought, I'm optimistic. But then she stares at Reginald from across the ring and he becomes hypnotized. And I thought, oh shit. So I got to say, Shayna Baszler, best of luck to you at Hell in a Cell. I have very low expectations for what's going to happen. But, man, I was so optimistic watching that Alexa match until the Reginald thing. Before that, I thought, they're going to stick to wrestling. They're not going to do this crap. They're going to stick to wrestling. No, they're not. They're going to do the crap.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do. I have no confidence that they won't do stuff like that. Yeah. And now they can run a big tournament, follow their hocus pocus characters, and call it Swing in the Ring. And the winner gets the playground and all that hocus pocus shit.
I think that is probably the best place to end this segment, Sean.
It is. Guys, thank you all so much. We're out.